listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 238 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show. The title of this episode is Crowdfunding is Dead, What's Next? And it's a special episode because it was recorded live at the 2019 DIY Musician Conference in Austin, Texas, which was an amazing event. Chris and I got to meet many of you there. That is always a highlight of the weekend. And you should definitely save the date for next year. The 2020 DIY Musician Conference will be August 28th through 30th in Austin, Texas, August 2020, a year from now. So mark your calendars. You're going to want to be there. It's an amazing weekend. So much we can say about what just happened. I'm sure Chris and I will do a debriefing in an upcoming episode. Early bird tickets will be on sale before you know it, so keep an eye out for that. All right, just a reminder, with every live taping of the podcast, you get to hear the podcast theme song again. So here we go. Crowdfunding is Dead, What's Next? Recorded live at the 2019 DIY Musician Conference. Enjoy.
You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY. DIY.
Musician.
All right. Get ready. Still going. Woo! All right. Welcome to a live taping of the DIY Musician Podcast here in Austin for the DIY Musician Conference. It's our first time in Austin. You guys having a good week? Yeah. Wow.
Nice.
Wow.
You have a lot of energy for people who should be exhausted.
I know. It's Sunday morning, and, you know, we've done this before in the mornings at other places, and they're like, no, I'm not clapping anymore. I'm just here. I'm just going to stare at you. But no, thank you for bringing some good energy this Sunday morning. It's been an amazing weekend. You know, those of you that listen to the podcast know that we've referred to this conference as one of the things, that the features of it is you tend to cry a lot while you're at it. I think I've cried like 20 times every day so far.
And not just because we're like putting out fires. And
yeah, no, they weren't tears of agony, but
I really did cry three times during DMC's talk yesterday.
Yes.
He was so great.
Yes. Yeah, super exciting. And those guys, both DMC and Questlove, all the speakers, like Gina Chavez, I mean, she stood out there for like 8 hours just talking to people, and they've all been very accessible and kind and friendly, and just great to have people from all walks of the music community here. And, you know, before we dive into the topic for today, it's crowdfunding is dead, what's next? Is that what we're talking about? Really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's an obituary.
Before we talk, dive into that, I have to say that there's sort of this, I would almost call it, it's not really a podcast success story, but if you've been listening to the podcast, you know we've had this ongoing conversation with Jeremy right here. He's in the front row of Space Moose, not Space Muse, like we erroneously said on the podcast. But yesterday, Bob Boylan played one of his songs during that session and had a very nice interview. So that was very cool to, you know, see the podcast come into real life. I know a lot of you listen to our voices, but we're also wondering, who are these people that are listening to us? But it's so cool to meet so many of you and see some of those storylines happen right here at the conference.
And you should definitely see if he minds if you use anything he said as a press quote.
Yeah, yeah. He speaking of Bob Boylan, we'll say one last thing before we get into the topic. I ran into Bob by the elevators on my way over here, and he was just gushing about all the amazing artists he met. He was at the showcases from start to finish and saw many of you performing, and he was just raving. He just couldn't believe about how many, the level of talent
that he was encountering and just the amazing artistry, and he was just blown away. So it's just really cool to see your music having impact on people like that, that can really help amplify what you're doing. So very cool.
And
my heart is full after that.
All right.
Now
let's stop being emotional and get into this death.
Yes. So you want to set us up? Why are we talking about, is crowdfunding dead?
Yeah. Okay. So once upon a time, in the not-so-distant past, there was this beautiful promise that we were all going to just, like, press a button, and all our fans were going to get super excited about our music, so that they would want to give us a bunch of money so we could fulfill our dreams, and you know, that $10,000 or $100,000 you needed to make a record or go on tour, it was just going to arrive, and it was easy, and then...
Well, yes, and then... And so on crowdfunding, I think it was like 2008 that we had somebody on the podcast for the first time talking about using Kickstarter, and it was this revolutionary idea. Hey, we can create a Kickstarter, and wow, it was so easy, and I got all this money. I asked for $10,000, I ended up with $100,000, mm-hmm. and there was this promise of easy connection with your audience. It's such a great way to connect with your audience, and you know, a lot of people were talking about the 1,000 true fans theory at that time, and it's like, you just need 1,000 people that really care about your music. I'm like, that seems easy.
And the other assumption was that those 1,000 true fans or any fans were going to be super psyched to help you every step of the way with crowdfunding.
Yeah, that they want to do this for you, and that this was a unique and new idea that seemed exciting to the fan community, because they got to... You know, participate in various rewards or packages that they could buy into.
We were also all convinced that crowdfunding was going to be the present and future model of funding projects, and it was going to replace labels and sort of as economic challenges were presenting themselves because CDs were selling less and all this stuff. It was like, oh, this is it. This is how we're going to make money now.
Yeah, and... The other thing that was out there was like that goals were often easily exceeded. You, like I mentioned, you had a goal of 10,000 and you're walking away with 100 grand, and that just seemed like to be the storyline, like, oh, I asked for 5,000 and got 20, and it just seemed so easy. And
and as you're making all that money from people that are just giving you their cash, we also thought that all those people were going to feel like this real sense of investment and ownership in our project that would then carry on past that particular crowdfunding campaign, and they'd feel like they're, yeah, long-term investors in your career and just want to keep helping and helping and helping forever.
Yeah, things like, I heard it said multiple times, like, your fans can actually help make this a reality. They love your music so much that they feel this ownership to make this next thing a reality. And it sounded amazing. And I think, the ownership and the idea that they would understand the creative process and what that means and what you're trying to do.
And then we tried it.
And then we tried
it. And not like two people is like a super scientific, control. Is it the control group or the test? I don't know what... I'm not a scientist, but we did do a survey and got hundreds of responses back that confirmed our suspicion.
So both Chris and I have done crowdfunding campaigns for various projects. I've done two. I had an independent band in Portland, Oregon, and we did a small project where I think we were only asking for like, I don't know, it wasn't much, like $1,500 just to finish up the project. We were already mostly done with it, and we just needed a little bit of money. So we didn't set a huge ambitious goal, but I thought, you know, I was still thinking $1,500, that equals $5,000 in crowdfunding world, because I'm told goals will be exceeded. And we scratched and clawed for $1,500. It would have been easier for me to go get a job at Starbucks and work in the evening to pay for that than what the amount of work I did to get $1,500. I was making like 5 cents an hour at that point. And then later on, I walked away from that situation going, I am never doing this ever again.
But you did.
I made some huge declarations to many people on the podcast about never doing it again. And then I did. I again got sucked in because my band, Small Town Poets, many of you that listen to the podcast know, we were signed to a major label back in the day. So we were starting to make records again independently. And there was this promise of like all these bands that were in our situation that had fans, you know, from, I would say, you know, legacy catalog. And now they're excited that you're making music again. And we heard this band that had a smaller fan base than us that asked for 10 grand and ended up with like $150,000. And like, that could be us. Let's try this one more time. I love torture.
Fools.
And in all transparency, we set a goal for 15,000. And the second one we did with Pledge Music. And with Pledge Music, which is now no longer, many of you have probably been hearing the storylines about that. They have a rep that works with you, and they'll adjust the goal. It's not like Kickstarter where it's a set goal, and if you don't hit that goal, it all goes away.
They didn't want you to really to know that, though. They kept it really quiet as an option, but they would dial down your goal because it was never public with Pledge Music. It was always sort of, yeah, what percentage towards your goal had you achieved? So
yeah, we had set a goal for 15,000. I basically had a night job every night of the week. I'd work at CD Baby all day. I'd go home and spend 4 or 5 hours a night running this campaign because it was an enormous amount of work, of marketing work, trying to come up with ideas and content. And we ended up around $10,000. And it helped us finish the album, but at the end of the day, it felt like, wow, this was not what I thought it would be. And you've done one too.
I use Pledge Music too, and my goal was 4,000. And just to summarize it really quickly, I reached that goal in half the amount of time I set for my campaign. I still would never do it again.
Yeah. And now I'm going to get a tattoo that says, I will never crowdfund again, just so I don't forget and get drawn back into it. There you go. Perfect. 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 So some of the realities that we discovered, we're going to run through really quickly of why the notes here say the realities of why it sucks. And also, I think one of the things that got us thinking about this, not only the demise of Pledge Music, but I had a friend who recently did a project in Portland. And when I saw her campaign, I'm like, oh, she has a massive network. And her goal was only $10,000, but knowing who she was and her network of people, I thought, oh, she'll hit this, no problem. This is going to be one of those stories where they walk away with $20,000 when only asking for 10. But then she didn't hit her goal, and she spent an enormous amount of time marketing, and then all this time trying to get those people that had converted, but they didn't hit her goal, so she didn't get the money. Now trying to reconnect with those folks, and I'm like, this is the awful reality, and so many artists that I've seen have missed that goal and had that problem, and just the idea that we've seen less and less artists doing this, so we just thought we'd have this conversation and go through some of those things of why it's a challenge.
Yeah, let's do it.
I just mentioned one, like the idea of the when your fans that have converted, if you don't reach your goal, they've already given you your money, and having to go back and ask for that again is really awkward. And you're going to lose people. Every time you have to get people to take an action, you're going to see drop-offs.
Well, because first, if they know you failed and you're coming around again, that just looks lame. The wind is going to be taken out of their sails. They'll be less excited. You will certainly be less excited. So you're probably even less apt to achieve your goal the second time around, unless you really learn your lesson and just completely change your strategy. But the other thing is, a lot of your fans, you might think they're paying close attention once they've contributed, but they probably aren't. So if you fail and then relaunch a campaign, they might even be like, what is going on? Is this the same thing? Is this a different thing? Because that's another, I think, reality is that even the people who contribute aren't really following the journey that closely.
Yeah, and a lot of the success stories that you were seeing about crowdfunding that really got artists excited about it, a lot of them were ex-major label artists that had massive fan bases that were harnessing them and seeing success with this. And that's not the case for the average independent artist, that you've got this massive fan base out there that a label has already done a lot of work to help build that you're taken advantage of. Great for them, but it's like I think a lot of people weren't really looking at that and doing the assessment, yeah, that's not something that's going to work for everybody. And then a lot of those major label, ex-major label artists that were doing this all went back and got deals again. And it wasn't something that, like, it was all, this is the future. They're just going to do this now. And a lot of them, they're like, no, this sucks. We're going back to the label. That was bad, but this is worse.
Yeah. The biggest thing that sucked for me is I realized, you know, I'm doing this campaign to fund a recording project. And ultimately, the recording project is the priority. It's where my passion's going. It's the point of all this. And instead, the crowdfunding campaign became this huge, kind of like a distraction. It took my eyes off of, it was so much work to manage that I became a full-time crowdfunder for, I don't know, 3 months or something, maybe even more, and almost forgot about the whole reason it was supposed to be crowdfunded. And so I took my eye off the recording project, off of sort of promoting it and building a plan for it after it was out and things that are, you know, really important to do. And I instead, like, I think in our normal lives, you know, we need to be doing a lot of different stuff. We're recording, writing, marketing, day jobs, whatever. You have these things that are sort of always going, and you can get into a rhythm and make like a daily habit of those things. Maybe you write for 10 minutes a day. Maybe you do your social media marketing for 20 minutes a day, whatever. But when you're crowdfunding, it's 24/7, basically, all that. And all the rest of those habits that might have been, you know, really well achieved kind of get disturbed.
Yeah, I just remember when I was doing the campaign with Small Town Poets. They're like, when are you going to send us those guitar tracks? I'm like, I don't know. I guess I'm a full-time crowdfunder now. That's all I do because that's all I have time for. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't get into it for the crowdfunding. I wanted to play guitar, but that's not what I'm doing right now. So I think also it looked really easy. People were like, oh, you just create this menu of rewards for your fans, and it's going to be so easy. And actually pulling together all the pieces and a video that feels authentic and explains the project and why they should care, those things were a lot harder than it looked when it came down to the reality of putting it together. So you launch something that feels authentic and genuine and thought out in a way that this is what people will want. This is how I should present myself so it doesn't just sound like I'm saying, please give me money. And it was pretty challenging.
Yeah, and you mentioned if you were actually doing this as a job, how little you'd be paid. I think because it's so much work and because it's so distracting, in the end, the goal you achieve, even if you're successful, ends up feeling not worth it. You might have been better off booking more gigs and saving that money or any other number of ways that you could be making the money in the
working
end.
Working at Starbucks, like I said. Yeah. That would have been much easier.
I exceeded my goal, and then I was just like, this drained me. It was not worth it. I was like, this, whatever it was, $4,500 I ended up with, like, I almost don't even want it. I wish I just had the time back.
Yeah, and also I think one of the realizations I had is that the type of project that you're doing may drastically impact the response from fans. The album that we funded on Pledge Music for Small Town Poets was a Christmas project, and I realized that there's a lot of people that view that type of project as, oh, it's not a real project. I know Christmas music has like exploded in the last couple years, and even, you know, all the pop stars do very nice produced albums. So I think some of that stigma around holiday music's changing. But, you know, this was 2014 when we were doing that, and I think people were still thinking, oh, you know, they're just gonna go in the studio and bang a few things out. And it was actually one of the nicest produced albums we've ever done up to that point. But the fans, you know, I remember someone leaving a comment going, oh, this is cool, but let me know when you're doing a real album. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if this is really impacting this campaign. And so I kept telling myself, if it wasn't a Christmas album, then we would have the $150,000.
Yeah, your fans are just like, oh, you're just playing around.
That's why I need that tattoo, because, see, I've already convinced myself, maybe there's a chance.
Yeah. The next, like, really hard reality is not only is the campaign itself, while it's running, so exhausting and so much work, fulfillment, once you've achieved your goal, fulfillment is a bitch. It is miserable. And suddenly you feel like a warehouse, like, product, you know, you're thinking about, what are they called, SKUs and barcode, not necessarily that, but suddenly just all the details of filling these orders become your whole life.
Yeah, that was just such, it's like this horrifying event that you see in your future of how do I actually ship 150 t-shirts? I don't know how to do that. That's terrifying. And how do you take 500 CDs to the mail? Fortunately, with ours, I been working at CD Baby. They shipped out all the non-signed albums, but then we had like 150 albums that we had to have signed as a band and ship out. And I was like, huh, I should have thought about this before I did that.
Well, didn't you also have the problem with your t-shirts where because they let the fans decide the color and then they're into, did you say
that? Yes. I thought, with Pledge Music, how that platform worked, and this may be a feature on Kickstarter as well. I haven't used it. But as people pledge for various things, it gives them access to, special content you can give them. And so one of the ideas I thought, to get people more engaged and contributing, we'll get some t-shirts designed and I'll let everyone decide which one they want us to make. I had no idea that when the designer made the design and put it on this one particular color, that there was only one t-shirt out there in all of t-shirt making land that was that color, and it was the most expensive American Apparel t-shirt that cost me like $11 a piece. And I was like, are you? And of course they picked that one.
So then to fulfill the obligation, you spend more money than you can make back. And I did the same thing. I had a poetry handmade, hand typeset, really nice poetry book made, and I thought, surely 25 people are gonna want this, and I forget how many it was now, but it might have been 5 people that bought it, and so I ended up spending more on the people who did the design and having it printed than I made on those whatever it was 5 people who wanted it. And like, I'm glad I have it now, I guess, because I can sell it at shows and stuff, but like ultimately at the time I was like, wow, I'm going into debt to make money, which is, I guess that's what all businesses do for a while, but it was just a bummer when you're putting all this work in.
Well, speaking of fulfillment, one of the things that we did is somebody could buy, for $1,000, they could buy the opportunity for us to record their song, not release it on our album, but they would send us their song, and we as a band would record our Small Town Poets version of it. And we launched the campaign, and within week one, someone bought that. And I thought, oh my gosh, here we go, $100,000. It's right around the corner. But they bought that. And so after the campaign ended and we started doing the song, they sent us the song. And, that's always a scary moment when you hear the song that you're about to record that someone from your fan community paid $1,000 for. And it was an okay song. It had some potential, and we actually invested a lot of time and effort to, we worked the arrangement. It had things like the chorus just kept repeating forever, and there was like an extra verse that wasn't needed, and so we actually helped him turn it into a very nice song, and we spent a lot of time recording it, and actually very much enjoyed my guitar solo on there. And we felt, we were very proud of ourselves. We honored this fan. We didn't just phone it in. We weren't just like play it down and send it back to him. Thanks for the $1,000. And so we did all this work, and then we sent it to the guy, and he basically went, meh. And I'm like, he's like, because we enhanced a couple lyrical lines where there was a hard turn of phrase and things. And he's like, eh. I think I like my version better. Like, oh my gosh, I'm going to kill you. So those things, it's like it wasn't what I expected. This great interaction with the fan where he felt like, oh, I've got this thing where we created this musical thing together and I got to collaborate with this band. It was more like, thanks, I'll listen to mine, So it's just weird.
Yeah, I was thinking, I just mentioned going into debt. And I feel like the whole excitement around crowdfunding was like, oh, I don't have to fund my recording project on a credit card and then maybe pay that back over the next 2 years as I sell CDs or whatever. And so, like, that's the excitement, right? But the problem is, You don't get funded until, with some of these platforms, like you couldn't even get the money until you'd fulfilled like a decent percentage of your obligations to the to your funder, and you need money to do that. So it's still going on the fucking credit card. in which case, just put it on the credit card and then sell your stuff and pay it back. It's like the whole problem it seemed to be solving wasn't even, yeah, being solved. Excuse my...
Chris with the potty mouth on the podcast. I always
you
have
can
to
beep
do
it. You can beep it.
No, it's live. It's happened. It's out there. Yeah, so beyond us complaining about why it sucked, I think there's some real problems where we stand with today and that have changed how, you know, the promise of crowdfunding and this great interaction with fans and all this. It's this new way where fans are going to feel invested, that whole storyline. I think that there's some realities that also set in that, one, everyone did it and it lost its power completely. That, you know, if you're a fan and you love this particular band, and you're like, oh, they're making something, this is like my favorite band, you might feel some investment, but when you're getting that from 20 different bands all trying to do this, you're just like, all right, this is enough. You guys just go do whatever you do. I don't need to be involved. And so it feels like the novelty wore off to the fan community and it lost a lot of its power. Not for everybody, but I feel like the concept of like, oh, I can help support the artist, that feels like a lot of that novelty wore off.
Yeah, and there were some cultural shifts that happened too that made the novelty wear off in a different way. I think in the age of streaming, people are less excited or they don't feel the need to wait around and get excited about these massive creative projects. Like, you know, there's just such a huge volume of music and a lot of it's singles. So you're not probably waiting around the same way you were 10 years ago for your favorite band's next album, because maybe they've been putting out singles along the way. So these massive endeavors on the artist side feel less important on the consumer side. And, you know, in the age of Spotify, I think subconsciously fans are just like, why do you need all this money to do this one big thing? Why don't you just put out a single next month and then work on another one and put that one out? You know, so it's sort of the scale of everything seemed to get diminished.
Yeah, and speaking of streaming, it also made the average easy rewards less desirable. Like typically campaigns were like, hey, for $10, you get the download. For $15, you'll get the download and the CD. And it's like, at that point, it's like most people are like, I don't care. I just, when it's on Spotify, I'll get it. You know, I'm not suffering for lack of music right now. And, you know, so it's, I'm sure some people still go that route, but it's just less desirable than it was. The idea of like, I get this different access to the music than how I normally, I don't even know how to get a download on my phone. I don't know. I just use streaming. So, That really, I think, impacts the power with a lot of those easier reward tiers that were pretty much staples of crowdfunding.
I bet if you go back and listen to some of our early episodes, if we talked about this, we probably were saying things like, you shouldn't feel like a professional beggar. Your fans are really going to want to invest in you. This is about offering them an experience to support you. And so we're going to eat our words. It now feels to me... not in all cases, but because of the amount of crowdfunding that was happening, I started to get that thing of like, just find another way to get good enough to get paid. Like, you feel like a beggar to me, particularly when crowdfunding becomes the sole way over and over and over again that an artist funds themselves. And sometimes these are the type of people that also happen to be asking you to constantly vote for them in different competitions, and they need your help for this, and like, stop asking me for things. Just give me something that I think is cool. So I am going to retract my statements from a decade ago and tell you to stop begging.
Well, this was always the hang up in Small Town Poets, why it took. We had talked about doing a campaign once we started making independent albums, and it wasn't until the third one that we actually did it, because one of the guys in the band is like, it just feels like begging to me. I don't, and for him, that was a big blocker. I feel like the campaign that we launched didn't have that tone, but I think that still for a lot of people, it can feel that way, and I think that can be a hindrance for them. But also, I did notice like that project that my friend did recently, where she didn't reach her goal, the tone after that really took a desperate turn. Ooh. And it did turn into really feeling like this desperate begging. And she ended up hitting the next goal. Like, she dropped it down like 5,000 and was fortunate to get everybody in. But she was kind of counting on hitting that goal. And then when she didn't, it was, I think, the bills were coming in. She had to pay the, you know, the engineers and mastering and all that kind of stuff. And it was feeling pretty like desperation. And that really, you know, fortunately she was able to get it, but it really set a different tone that's like, I'm sure she'll probably never do it again.
Yeah, and the weird thing about that incident when you missed your goal, and like, you know, in marketing speak, it's like they're all conversions. You've done the hardest thing possible. You've gotten someone to give you money. And then in the weird instance of crowdfunding platforms where that goes away if you don't meet a you know, some sort of larger goal, all those conversions become absolutely worthless. And like, you don't ever want to be in a situation where a conversion can get completely negated.
Yeah. And from a fan perspective, one of the campaigns that I contributed to, you know, I bought like whatever tier came with, like the download and a t-shirt and a CD. You know, the whole idea of crowdfunding was like, this is how your fans can feel involved in the process and feel like they're helping make this happen. I contributed. I didn't get the t-shirt and CD until over a year later. So
was that my campaign?
No, it was not.
I wasn't that late.
No, it was not. But I do remember going, Chris, did you forget to send me that t-shirt? So the idea that I would feel engaged with this project that I contributed to, and then, you know, it wasn't until a year later when I totally had forgotten about it. It just wasn't the reality of how the experience felt from the fan side either. Yeah, and we've got some...
Should we go up and mention some of the stats
real quick? Yeah, so we put a SurveyMonkey questionnaire on our blog, the DIY Musician blog, asking artists some of their thoughts about crowdfunding.
Yeah. And so of the responses, 160 of the people who responded had actually done a crowdfunding campaign. And then we just have some quick percentages we could rattle off. 43% of those people used Kickstarter, and then, you know, it was pretty evenly split after that between Pledge Music, GoFundMe, Indiegogo, things like that. Patreon was included in that. Let's see. The biggest... 77% of those people were successful and reached their goal, so about a quarter of the people failed. But there were people who had done multiple campaigns, and in the comments they had mentioned that they had failed a few times. So that percentage of successful versus failed campaigns is probably more towards fail.
Plus, we noticed as the data was coming in that it was clear that people that did successfully do this were willing to fill out the survey. For the rest of us, the pain and the wounds are still too deep and you don't even want to talk about it. Yeah. So, that 77% successful number to me is very suspect. But like Chris said in the comments, some people were like, yeah, it took me two or three times of failure before I actually funded one. I'm like, okay, that's very important to note. And we didn't really structure the survey that way to understand that. But
the most common goal, a range, I mean, this is a pretty big range in itself, but was $4,000 to $10,000. So I think about a third of the respondents were aiming for that. The rest were mostly on the lower side, but we had a few people who were going for like $100,000.
Yeah, and 70% of them said they were funding a recording project. So we were curious, like, do people see more success if they're doing a recording or if they're doing like a tour, or like I've seen people do it, we need to buy a tour van or things like that. But it seemed like most people were just using it to record a project.
And what surprised me is that 70% of these fools said they would do it again. I should now say, if it's actually working for you and you're excited, you should still do it. Like, but
yeah, and I think part of the context of the conversation as well is that at the podcast, we get lots of emails from artists that are just starting out, haven't released anything yet, and they'll be like, okay, I'm getting ready to launch. I've got this in order. I'm getting a Patreon started, or I'm going to crowdfund this thing. And I'm like, that's not going to work for you when you're just starting out. Maybe if you've got, you know, a big network of people that are there to support you. But for the average person, that's not the point when you bring this into the mix. That's, to me, goes back to that mindset of like, oh, this is just, instead of putting on my credit card, this is what I do and I get the money.
Yeah. I think that I get that question a lot from artists who have maybe one album out or haven't even put something out yet. You know, I'm getting my Patreon set up, like you just said. And I think now's not the time for that. Any content you create that's worthwhile when you're like building a new fan base should be outwardly facing and attracting, you know, cold audiences, to use a marketing term, but like attracting the strangers to your music. So down the road, maybe they'll be interested in this, in the thing you want to keep behind some private gate. But yeah, if you're creating content, don't kill its reach too early.
Yeah. So we've got some thoughts from those artists that took that survey. Like, we left a section where you could give feedback. What would you tell other artists? And then we'll get into where we think the future is, and then we'll take some questions. But so some of them said, set my target lower and make the album on the cheap. And you had a comment to that one, like, why don't you just make the album on the cheap and not have to
and
do
not
this
need the money, right? Yeah, that's an interesting one now, because like, I know we all still probably dream of being in the studio with the great session players or the amazing producer, and I know that takes money, but we're also in a world where like, your audience doesn't know or care that it costs that much money. And so many people are just like, well, can't you just make records in your bedroom now? And yes, you can. So I think another thing early on to do is try to streamline your creative process so that it can also be affordable. And when you make a habit of that, then your output can, you know, reach a fan base who maybe will support you in this type of way down the road.
Yeah, and another artist said, reach for a higher goal. Pledge Music limited the goal. So on a lot of these platforms, I'm not sure how Kickstarter does it. I know they've all of them have morphed over time how they handle this. They will approve the project, and if they think your goal is too high, like, they'll look at your audience base, like your social networks and all that kind of stuff, and if they think your goal's too high, they won't let you launch the project. I don't know if Kickstarter does it that way, but that's definitely how Pledge Music did it. And so sometimes you run into those things where the platform may not let you ask for more money.
Well, that was one thing I didn't expect about my campaign. I should have set a higher goal too, but I think the fact that I didn't save me some of that emotional strife that a lot of artists carry throughout these campaigns of like, am I going to get there? Am I going to get there? I'm like, oh my God. I didn't have so much of that. But yeah, in the end, I was like, I could have raised more money. But then once I reached my goal, I was like, now it feels like begging to need
yes,
more.
Yes. Another artist said pre-plan posts and graphics. That's what a lot of the work that I was doing along the way during that pledge campaign, just to keep it interesting for fans. Another artist said keep it simple. In the past, we tried to offer too much.
That's a huge one. Just getting too ambitious with your rewards and stuff, and suddenly you have to spend money and time to fulfill things that maybe only interested two or three people. Not worth it. Just really keep it focused on, you know, four or five options that are easy to fulfill.
This was an interesting comment by somebody. They said, I should not have said I was using the money for PR. This was an artist that had funded multiple ones and failed, and then finally got one, but they felt like the reason that particular one failed is because they said they were using it for PR and felt like the response from the fans were, we don't need to pay for your PR. Someone else can do that. That's not what I'm invested in, is your PR campaign. So I thought, yeah, you know, just like I was saying earlier, like the type of campaign you're doing or what you're trying to fund may impact the result, just because the fan community, how they feel connected to it may be different.
And on the flip side of that, one person responded and said, their mistake was basically funding for the project, but not budgeting for kind of the business marketing type PR expenses that would then carry this record, you know, to do more beyond the campaign. So it set them up in this cycle where they felt like, okay, crowdfunded that. I didn't budget to actually make the record successful in a different way. So now I need to crowdfund again for my next record. And it was almost like a quick fix after a quick fix rather than building a kind of habitual smart practice. So maybe the answer is plan to use some of the money for your business marketing expenses. Just don't tell anyone.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what we did with the Small Town Poets campaign. Most, we had already recorded halfway through the project, and then this money was to, like, get us over the hump and also have some money to launch the album. But we didn't tell the fans, hey, this is to go pay a marketing guy to run Facebook ads. I'm like, what? I don't want to pay for that. You go get your own Facebook money. So it's really, you know, making sure that what you're asking for accounts for everything or what you think you're going to need to really give it a good launch. The last one from artists that I think was exactly what I experienced on both of the campaigns I did is one of the artists said they realized that most of their funders were friends and family, and it felt like charity, as opposed to this building connections with fans that were engaged. And that's the two campaigns that I did. I was running the campaigns, but both of them were for bands, so it wasn't, and I'm not the lead singer of either of these bands, so it's not like it's all my thing, but in both those cases, the biggest funder was my dad. And so you're like, ugh, I just asked my dad for a lot of money. That doesn't... I'm a 40-year-old guy asking my dad for money to make a record. Where has my life gone?
Another problem one person found is that they launched their campaign without knowing that a couple other bands in the same scene were going to do the exact same thing at the exact same time. So now there's competition between, you know, their shared audience. So you got to know who's doing what and when.
Yeah. So the future. I mean, obviously, there's still ways that you can tap into revenue sources from your audience, but I think it's moved into a smarter, lighter version of what we were promised back in like 2007, 2008 when this whole idea came out. One thing that's become popular is more of a subscription type engagement with the fans. Excuse me. Like Banzoogle, who we just announced here at the conference, who we're partnering with now to provide websites for artists, they just launched a completely free subscription service from your Banzoogle page, so they don't even take a cut of it. So it's a way that you can, fans that want to help support you and just want to drop a couple bucks in to help keep you going, I think that's an easier way to do the have the conversation. Instead of like planning this whole big, I don't know, big dog and pony show of all these rewards you can have, it's like, you know what? You know what, help me out, just throw a couple bucks every month. It's like a tip jar kind of thing. I think some of those subscription services, I mean, Patreon is that way. A lot of artists say, should I use Patreon? I'm like, well, Patreon's really more a subscription type service based around releasing serial content. Jack Conte that started was a YouTuber releasing lots of videos and just wanted to get paid every time he released something. So if you're just doing an album every 2 years, Patreon is not for you unless you've got some sort of ongoing fan engagement. Really, that platform is huge in the podcasting community because podcasts release serial content, and people that want to see that podcast continue and support it, it's an easy platform to do that.
Yeah, another option for funding things is microfunding, which is basically, you know, this on a much smaller scale. There's a company, we don't actually know, we think it's called Crates, but it's spelled Q-Rates, where you can basically say, you know, like... do I have enough fans that want vinyl to make it worth it? And they kind of facilitate that. So it's not this big stretch goal kind of thing. You can write your email list and be like, I'm thinking about making this hat. Who's interested? And if, you know, 25 people or 100 people write you back and they're like, yeah, I might buy that, then you know it's probably worth buying in bulk or whatever. But it's kind of about testing the waters before you have to make the leap of production.
Yeah, and this is something that I'm probably going to try that service soon with my band because we get a lot of people like, you know, now that vinyl's had a resurgence, are you guys going to release this on vinyl? I'm like, well, I've got some anecdotal feedback from the fans that it might be good, but I don't want to go drop $2,000 getting vinyl printed and find out that those three people were the only ones that wanted it. So that site is a great site where it's like you put the project up there. If enough fans buy in, they'll press the vinyl and ship it to them. And so it's an easy way to fund something, you know, like we said, like more micro funding. Like, here's the thing that if you guys want this in the community, we'll get it to you, but you got to buy in first. And being more specific and less about, oh, there's all these rewards you get that take forever to fulfill, and I don't really care about anyway.
Yeah. We'd sort of touched on this already, but I think we're now in the age of it being a good thing that you set less ambitious goals, which might sound terrible. But I mean, creatively speaking, like, you don't need to do the 12-song album every year. Like, put out singles, get good at home recording, you know, work on a DIY budget, make a habit of getting a good product from minimal expenditure. Because ultimately, like, you'll probably feel healthier anyways, like working in chunks and seeing your achievement and finishing a song and putting that out. And that's kind of what the streaming platforms are rewarding anyways. They want you to be almost like a serial content producer of music. And so if you're putting out a lot of singles, more chances to continually reach your audience on these platforms. And I think that ultimately saves us a lot of headaches around things like crowdfunding.
Well, and also, yeah, with the idea of less ambitious goals, if you are trying to get, you know, do like a crowdfunded thing from your fans, it doesn't have to be this gigantic album where you go to Abbey Road and spend $1 million making it. It can be something where it's like, hey, if we hit this goal of $1,000, we'll record 2 singles. They'll be out in a month. And just keeping it more simple and just less ambitious, like it has to be some monumental event that you're funding, because I think that's how a lot of people were approaching it at first.
Well, and that provides quicker turnaround for fans as well, which is really important these days. You know, everyone talks about how you can't disappear for years at a time to work on your next magnum opus or whatever. So,
well, and also, the idea with the quicker turnarounds too is, like I mentioned, that one I did where I got the T-shirt and the CD a year later. So clearly fan funding, which a lot of people talk about, oh, it's this great engagement thing, they're there along for the process. I'm like, no, I wasn't. I totally forgot about you. You disappeared from my life for a year. And then this random T-shirt shows up. I'm like, what is this? And then I'm like, oh, wow, that took a long time. And so it's like your fans, if you're getting them to convert in the moment of like, oh yeah, I'd like to see them make this thing, the quick, keeping it simple so that it can be that engagement, like they feel like, oh, I paid for this to happen and here it is a month later, or, you know, 2 months later. But the further it gets away, it's just that idea of I'm engaged with your creation process just doesn't exist.
Yeah. And, not that you need to think of every connection point with your fans as something that needs to be monetized. Like, you shouldn't do that. But there are some ways, if you are getting into serial content creation, you're going live on Facebook or whatever it is, you know, you can just use a PayPal tip jar sort of thing and find ways to just get 50 cents from someone every couple weeks. Or just, you know, there's a lot of ways to make a little bit of money, and maybe that adds up to what you need.
Yeah, PayPal.me is actually a really cool tool that can be integrated in a lot of places. I know Rick Barker had a whole talk last year, I think it was last year at the conference, it might have been 2 years ago, where he talked about how an artist was using this in conjunction with their live stream. It wasn't this big ask, it wasn't like they were begging, but that link was there while they were doing the live stream, and they just got really good and engaging doing a live stream, their fans started dropping money in.
She made $90,000.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sounds like, wow, that's crazy. But the cool thing was, it was all, her focus was creating good engagement with her music on Facebook Live. And the result was people gave money to that. She wasn't on Facebook Live saying, click the link, please. That's why we're here, to keep clicking that link. Let's see the money roll. She did have a nice ask, but it's still the engagement, and the reason people were showing up was the music. And she got good at that platform, and the result was money. So I think there's opportunities like that for integrating into, as things are more online and live streaming becomes something that artists are more incorporating, that using those tools that can help you achieve the same revenue goals without having to launch this whole giant campaign.
And to clarify, in case I confused anyone, she made that in a year. She didn't live once on Facebook and make $90,000.
Oh, man, that was my plan for this afternoon. I'm like, I'm going to go live, have 90 grand. We're going to have the best party later tonight.
Just stay live all day long.
Just stay live. I think that sums up some of our thoughts about crowdfunding and how it's changed and what people have learned in the past, and how, you know, I would encourage artists to start thinking about those options when they're approaching projects. And the last thing I want an artist to see or experience is to to spend all this time and energy running a campaign that is a total distraction from just getting better at their craft and making more music, getting better at the writing and recording process, and getting distracted by becoming a professional marketer and then not getting the goal, because that's nothing crushes your soul more in the which should be some of the best experiences you experience as an artist, that process where you're just creating and you're all the stuff's coming out and you're trying to get all the emotions and the excitement recorded and you're just so excited about it, but then have this thing running alongside where it's just sucking your soul away. That's just not how you see success and growth as an artist. So to me, that's what I want people to avoid if their fans are not ready to contribute and get on board for a big fan-funded campaign.
Yeah. I think we have about 10 minutes for questions, or if you want to share your crowdfunding experiences.
Yeah, and we've got a microphone here, so if you can speak into the microphone, it'll make it on the podcast.
Okay. My name's Wesley, and you brought up crates. I think it's pronounced crates. Yeah. And I wanted to just speak to that. I have a friend who runs a very successful YouTube site called Too Many Records, and just this past year, he started reaching out to artists who have never had any of their albums pressed to vinyl. So if you're interested in that and you want to reach out to Too Many Records, he actually will reach out to his fan base and say, hey, I have this new artist, is anyone interested? And then do like you said, like ask before you press. So then he goes for the target and he's like, okay, so we'll do 300, and then he releases the crates, and then they get the 300 and then some, and then it's like a limited pressing. So it's like, here they are, we're never gonna do this again, and that way it's very special and all the fans are engaged, and then you also get his fans. So
that's cool.
Yes,
and
crates.
So he's sort of sourcing the interest but still using crates to do the manufacturing.
Yeah, it's kind of like double middlemen, but also more engagement from everybody.
Oh, cool.
No, that is cool. Yeah, because there's especially the vinyl collector community is massive. And so there are ways to tap into, to sort of pre-filter if you're going to have success or not, so you don't waste your time if you're not.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you.
Have you seen that meme of the kid mowing the grass and it says like crowdfunding 1980? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? And to me, it's like, while it's not everybody's idea to go mow their neighbor's yard or anything, I think it really is about bringing that value to your listeners. And so whatever that is, and you mentioned live streaming, that has done a number for me, because I put a lot of free content out daily and then a live stream weekly. And I got that from your podcast, actually, when you were mentioning live streaming, it inspired me to do it. And so I think that it's really important to come from a very genuine place, especially if you are asking for money, because I'm fortunate to be a one-man band, but larger bands need a bigger budget. So,
yeah.
You know, I think if it just comes from a genuine place and you have that community that supports you, it might be a good idea. I would definitely suggest not to do it again and again and again, because it does become redundant and tiresome. But yeah, all the love, you know, I mean, I think bring some love and bring some genuine to
get,
it.
Get people. A job, musician. But your job could just be to be a musician
and
just play
grass.
More gigs.
Yeah.
Oh, and I brought two t-shirts for you guys.
Oh, excellent.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, the funny thing, I will say, because I made a couple cracks about working at Starbucks. I worked at Starbucks for 4 years while I was going through one of the most creative outpourings of my entire life. And I wrote so many songs in my head while I was sitting there at Starbucks making lattes, thinking I want to be anywhere but here making lattes. But sometimes, like, putting yourself in that situation, like, I'm doing this to make it happen, and it changes what your brain's doing. You can get ultra creative in that environment, where when you're just pounding away, feeling like you're beating your head against the wall, you know, it could have the opposite effect. So that's why, like, the mowing the lawns or something, sometimes that's just a way where you get really inspired because you have a mission. I'm doing this to make this thing happen, and it can be very inspiring in creativity.
Have you ever heard of any artist doing, like, a pre-sale of a digital single to actually fund their recordings?
Yeah, I've seen people do that, and I know there's tools. I believe Bandcamp has some tools like that. I know Bandcamp also has some subscription options as well that artists use to fund things. But My take on it is that really, unless people, it's like, it's really hard for me to take action, and speaking as a music fan, when I know it's going to be on Spotify day one, so it's just like, just put it on Spotify and I'll get it day one. That's what I love about our marketing platform that we have at show.co at CD Baby, that if you're a CD Baby artist, just go to the dashboard, click on the link, and you'll get that marketing platform for free. Our like Spotify pre-save campaign that you can create actually is designed in a way to give the fans special content or rewards, so there's a reason for them to want to do that, and an incentive to take action on a song ahead of time. Because if you're wanting me to fund a single just for like pay for my single, I think you got to find a way to make it creative and interesting, because a lot of fans, I mean, that's the thing. The fan community doesn't understand, by and large, the creative process. So when you're asking them to enter into it with you, a lot of times you can get mixed reactions because they don't understand, why do you need this or what's going on. But I think with a song, people see them flying out so fast that, I don't know, it'd be just something interesting to experiment with.
Well, I think with show.co, it focuses your efforts a little bit, because you have to be reminded that the conversion itself isn't enough for your audience a lot of times. Like, if Radiohead said, hey, pre-save my song, I wouldn't do it. But if they said, pre-save my song, and then you'll immediately be linked to this private thing on, or, you know, an unlisted video on YouTube where we do a rig rundown, or where we talk about, you know, just something extra. That's what I want, because the music itself I'll get.
So if I was going to do a pre-sale of a single, I would make sure that there was some sort of special incentive like that. Like Chris and I were talking about this one time, and if it was like you two saying pre-save the song, I'm like, I know it's going to be in my face everywhere on day one. I will not forget. But if they said pre-save it and you can hear the Edge's guitar track soloed for 10 hours straight, and I'd be like, I'm there. So it's
with a rainbow cat gif going,
yeah, yeah, and I'll just sit there and listen for 10 hours straight, just the Edge's guitar track soloed, you know, stuff like that. I think is, whether you're asking for money or pre-saving, you got to add some sort of value to them that is intriguing, adds to the story, that makes it fun. We probably have time for one more question, maybe two if they're quick. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Hi, Jeremy from Space Moose again.
You're like our
co-host. I have to say, for the benefit of the podcast listeners who have been following the Space Moose trilogy of questions on the podcast, Bob Boylan and I were talking Thursday night, and he was telling me that he picked your song, and he was calling it Space Muse. And I said, Bob, I need to tell you, it's called Space Moose, and we had this whole back and forth on the podcast about it.
I know. I think this is the fifth podcast we've appeared on, of yours. So you were talking a moment ago about self-producing and, you know, how you can keep your costs down doing that, and certainly that has been the case for us. It has cost us almost nothing to record, do videos, do the social media platform. We've spent very little, and it's been amazing. I mean, we, like Kevin just said, we were on Bob Boylan's piece here. So, but now our challenge is how to get out to our fan base live. Because what we found is that the fan base has grown. Yes, a lot of it's in LA, where, you know, we're kind of centered, but we've also got fans in Denmark and Germany and the UK, and they were kind of all over the place. So I was wondering, you know, you talked about Facebook Live. Are there venues like that where we might be able to play live streaming, and also look for funding through that, like the PayPal me?
Well, I know you also have the challenge of your members are
we're also all over the place, yeah.
Right, so, but you're talking about all getting together.
Getting together and saying, okay, here we are live, but since our fans are so spread out all over the world, this is such a global phenomenon now. How can we reach them rather than trying to play in one city after another and carter stuff around and, you know, the more traditional way?
Mm-hmm. How often can you all get together to put in the effort?
At least a few times a year. I mean, there's ways to do it. We can make it happen.
I mean, I think that is a challenge. I think it's a good challenge. It points to the fact that it very much is a global music economy, and a lot of times artists are too locally focused at times and realize, oh, I've got a lot of fans. For whatever reason, there's lots of people in the Netherlands. Like for my band, there's a big playlist in the Netherlands that added one of our songs. So there's all these people in the Netherlands that listen to our music and like, how do we get there? Because I don't know. I think that's a challenge. I think it's a good challenge. I think there may be some ways you can do some special live stream content for just people in those regions, or, you know, just maybe special releases for some playlists that are based in those areas that can help build the fan base more before you try to attempt going there. But if you figure that one out, let me know, because I've got a similar problem. My band's all over the place as well.
Well, it seems like when you're together, it's a special time, so you've got to use it. And maybe that is an area where you spend some money and do have it captured on video and audio in a really professional way that is live streamed. And if you go live for an hour or 2 hours after, as long as what you're capturing is high quality, just take that and chunk it down into a bunch of separate videos to keep sharing stuff from your efforts. But at least you're live streaming and having kind of archival stuff you can use as video ads and things like that.
Unfortunately, our time is up, and we need to close this out.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for being here. It's been an amazing weekend, and Chris and I will be out here hanging out for a bit. And don't forget, tonight it's still going at Cheer Up Charlie's, 6 to 10 p.m. again. And we'll be over there and love to talk to as many of you as possible. So thank you.
See y'all.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode. If you'd like to weigh in on the idea of crowdfunding, I'd love to hear your take on it. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. Try to keep the messages brief and to the point so we can get them on the show. And of course, if you want the best in music distribution, monetization, and all the cutting-edge music promotion tools, head on over to cdbaby.com. I'll catch you later. Bye.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.